Today is Monday, February 14th, 2022. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Janny Turner. Her name is spelled J-A-N-N-I-E, last name spelled Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Janny. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks.
Great. Janny, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, that's fine.
Thank you so much. Janny, what year were you born?
I was born in 1946 in Flagstaff.
In Flagstaff, Arizona.
Yes.
How did your parents meet? What were their names and how did they meet?
Okay, my dad's name was James Mars Wilson. And my mother was Ella Mae Whitaker. And they met my mom was a Navy nurse on Guadalcanal, and my dad was a Marine fighter pilot in the South Pacific. But they didn't meet until they both were at the end of the war when they were back in San Diego area.
Oh, okay.
And that's how they met. And they got married, actually, in their uniforms in, I'll have to think about that. I think it was like Chula Vista or something.
Okay, what year did they get married?
1945.
Okay. How do you spell your dad's middle name?
M-A-R-S.
That's an unusual name. How did he come by that name? Do you know?
That was his mother's maiden name.
Okay.
His mother was from Galesburg, Illinois. Her name was Catherine Mars.
Okay. Where did your dad grow up?
He grew up in Flagstaff. He was born in Flagstaff and grew up in Flagstaff.
So I'm trying to put timeline together. He was probably born in the 1910s or 20s.
1920.
Okay.
Both my parents were born in 1920.
And what were his folks doing in Flagstaff?
Well, his dad came in like 1909, looking for a better place for them, him and his wife, to live. Catherine Mars, it was my grandfather's wife. He was Charles Burge Wilson, CB they called him. And he was a lawyer. And he moved to Flagstaff in like 1909, and he became a lawyer here and a judge over the years. But they came out then and built a home here. So my dad was born later, of course, from when they first got here. But my grandfather was pretty prominent citizen. You know,
what was Charles's middle name?
Burge, B-I-R-G-E.
Thank you.
And that was his mother's maiden name.
Okay.
So.
Nice. I'm sorry, you were saying that your grandfather, Charles Wilson, was a lawyer and came to town and then became a judge. Please go on. I interrupted you there.
Oh, that's okay. He was very, very active in Flagstaff. He bought an entire city block when he first moved to Flagstaff, and it's directly across the street west from the courthouse downtown.
Okay.
And he bought that whole block in there and then eventually sold off pieces of it, you know, so. But he built his law office right on the corner. Well, actually, the law office was there in the old pictures. I see it was there. It was just a little teeny tiny rock house. And that was the law office, and then they had the big white house there. And so he just walked across the street to the courthouse.
That's nice.
Worked, of course. Yeah.
Nice. I'm trying to think of a gentleman who had a garage right in there, and I'm thinking his name was Lester Cooper, but I could be wrong.
Probably before my time.
Okay. Well.
The only garage I remember was the Babbitts having a garage right across the street.
Yeah, okay. So then he became a judge and raised a family.
Yes, He was, off and on judge. He would get, he would be a judge, and then he would be something else. But he was county. He was sworn in as Coconino County's first county attorney on statehood day in the courthouse. So that was kind of neat.
Wow. Okay.
So.
Did I'm just going to, as names come up and I'm thinking about them, I'm going to ask you, do you remember a woman named Kathleen Weiss?
Oh, gee, I remember that name, but I don't.
She was secretary to the city attorney and to the mayor back in the 50s, I believe. Anyway, I just put that out there. Okay. So he was off and on the Coconino County attorney. And he was the first county attorney.
Because it was statehood day, so that's when the first county attorney office was actually initiated.
Okay.
So he was in a lot of things. He was a real big wig in the Kiwanis, Rotary.
Okay.
Real big in the Rotary and in the Masons. Were big in Flagstaff at that time anyway.
Okay.
So, and he was one of the investors that invested their money in the building of the Monta Vista.
Really?
So, yeah,
wow.
I found that they had a plaque in the Monta Vista behind the counter back in a storeroom kind of thing. I took a group of second graders in there on a Flagstaff history trip. And happened to mention to the guy that my grandfather invested, and he said, "Oh," and he pulled out this plaque, and my grandfather's name was on it.
Oh my!
And then he put it back in the storeroom. I have no idea where it is.
Oh my, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, but that was fun.
Yeah. So your father, James, did he go by Jim?
Uh huh. He did.
Okay.
Jimmy, as a kid.
Jimmy, yeah.
Jimmy as a kid.
Did your father give speak to you, give you any stories about it? What it was like to grow up in Flagstaff in 1930 during the Depression?
Well, I have a letter written by my grandfather to my dad's mother, who was visiting her family in Illinois, and he said, "Jimmy has this," and the date on the letter was 1926, so he was like 6 years old.
Okay.
And he said, "Jimmy has been hard at work hauling coal to people's houses and chopping so many cords of firewood, and, it was work." They worked. And he and his brother, all of their meat, they went out in the woods and hunted and brought back meat. They had a meat hanging room in the house. And so the boys hunted for my grandfather, never hunted a day in his life, but both his sons kept the family fed during the Depression with me.
Wow.
He also said, my dad said he absolutely hated raisins because it was the only fruit they could get during the Depression, and so his mother put raisins in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew up saying, "Just don't want to eat any more raisins in my life."
It must have been really hard to get any kind of fruit in Flagstaff during that time.
So isolated. We are so dependent now on semi-trucks, and in those days, I don't really know how everything got here.
The
I
train.
Sedona,
right?
Some of the peach farms and the apple farms and stuff down in Sedona, those guys would haul their stuff up here and sell it.
That's right. Okay.
But that was seasonal,
Right.
The rest of the time. They did have, my grandfather also built, besides the meat hanging room, there was an apple cellar. He built on the side of Mars Hill.
Okay.
And there's a road going up Mars Hill. When you're on your way up to the observatory on the left, there's a road that says Wilson Road, and it was my grandfather's house and my uncle's house.
Nice.
And both houses had an apple cellar.
Okay.
So that they could keep fruit in the house, because they just had no refrigeration or anything really to keep it, and it was so hard to get. So when the apples came in, they would stack, crates of apples in there to eat all winter long.
So it was basically cold storage.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was carved into the side of the hill, so it was a cave,
actually. Mm-hmm.
But they had built it themselves, but it cold storage.
Nice. Yeah. Cold. Yeah. It was the icebox of its day, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. What else do you remember about that time?
My dad, in the summers, would work on some of the cattle ranches. I have pictures of him and his brother both. They rode horses, and I have my dad's saddle he had when he was just a kid.
Oh, my.
And it was made by Doc Martin, who was an important saddle maker downtown in those days. The old pictures have his saddle shop on First Street or whatever, Main Street. And so they would go out and work on the ranches and stuff and help out the ranchers in the summer times with,
okay,
you know, branding and rounding up and all that kind of stuff.
And
both of them did that.
Back in the day, this is 1930, 1935, when your father was 10 to 15,
right.
I mean, it sounds like if he was hauling coal and cutting wood when he was six, by the time he was 10, he would have been old enough to do a lot of things.
Yes. He did a lot of odd jobs like that, you know, for other people to earn money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do have pictures, and I don't know all of this, but I have pictures of my dad and his brother out fishing on one of the lakes and bringing home fish also for dinner.
Okay.
But in many of them, they're accompanied by a black guy who I think worked for his dad. But I don't know who he was or anything. I'd like to find that out.
Yeah.
I'd like to know, because that was early on.
I know that African Americans worked in the sawmill for good money, for the Reardons. But yeah, that'd be fascinating to know who that might be.
Yeah, and he may have been somebody that came out from Galesburg in Illinois, even, because my grandpa's in-laws were part of the underground.
Do you remember any of that story?
That's all I know, and I just came across it in something that said how Hiram was his name, Hiram Mars, had been part of the underground during the Civil War era up there in Galesburg, Illinois. So
Galesburg, G-A-I-L-S-B-U-R-G?
G-A-L-E.
G-A-L-E-S?
Yes.
B-U-R-G.
B-U-R-G.
Thank you. Wow, fascinating.
I have a lot of stuff. I have a lot of things. I sort of ended up, I guess, being a family historian. I have a manuscript he wrote as a kid growing up. They were in Kentucky. They grew up on a plantation in Kentucky and then moved to Galesburg.
But okay.
As a kid, he had servants. You know, he had a black mama that he called Mama, and her son was his companion. He had to go hunting with him to keep him safe when he would go coon hunting.
Hmm.
All those things that Kentucky kids did, I guess. But they were real close to him in those days. And it's funny because it's a handwritten manuscript. Writing was hard to decipher and everything. But he called his servants darkies. And my typewriter, I tried to type it to preserve the story, and my typewriter was one of the old ones, you know, manual, but it beeped if you made a spelling mistake, and every time I typed that word, the silly typewriter was just beeping, beeping, beeping.
My.
I tried to type it out. I have it. Well, the story. But, yeah. So, but then when they left Kentucky, they moved to Galesburg, and then I understand he was part of the Underground Railroad.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering if he didn't, you know, take some people with him, type of thing. So, but anyway, they were out, and my dad and his brother went fishing out on one of the lakes. I can't recognize which lake it is from the old pictures.
Did your grandfather serve in the Civil War?
No.
No.
My grandfather did not. His dad was a mason by trade, and also a member of the Masons.
Okay.
And
This was Charles's father.
Yes, C.P.'s father. And so they didn't have much money or anything, and he really didn't get a formal education. He taught himself everything he needed to know to be to pass the bar exam and become a lawyer and a judge. It was all self-taught because they didn't have much money for that. So, but her family, the Mars family, is the ones that lived in Kentucky and went to Galesburg.
Okay.
So,
And they must have done fairly well when they came to Flag to have enough funding to buy a city block, unless city blocks were pretty cheap back then, which could have been too.
I think they were pretty cheap because it was really early on.
Uh-huh.
And there was, on that city block, was a church, and my grandfather donated that church to get it off of his property. He donated that church to what he called in his memoirs the Mexican Methodists on the south side.
Oh.
And it's still down there. It's that church on, I think it's San Francisco. I think it's on San Francisco. Anyway, it's, and there's a plaque on it. It's a historical marker that the church was there. But in Platt Klein's book, he's the one that mentions that my grandfather gave that to him. But my grandfather also mentioned it in his memoirs.
Okay. And of course,
they needed that church. And the whole church was moved on a wagon, you know, horse-drawn wagon.
I was going to say, how did they get it down there?
Yeah, they put it on a flatbed and horse-drawn and moved it down to South San Francisco and put it there. And it was in use. I think it's still in use. It's been used by many different denominations over the years.
Nice. Huh. And Platt Klein, spelled P-L-A-T-T, K-L-I-N-E. E, thank you. And of course,
he wrote some books about early Flagstaff. They came to the mountain is one of them.
Yes.
It's Flagstaff history, yeah.
They came to the mountain as the definitive on Flagstaff history.
Right. They were very, actually, my cousin, who also had the same grandfather, her godparents were Mr. and Mrs. Klein.
Oh, my.
So they were all good friends.
Okay. And so your grandfather, C.W., would have known Platt, but Platt would have been young. He would have been a young guy, huh?
Yes, but her, my dad and his brother were the ones that were friends with Platt Klein.
Contemporaries.
Yeah.
Yes.
And his brother is the one who is the father of my cousin, of course.
Okay, yes.
And he was Charles Burge Wilson, Jr. So, and he went by Charles. My grandfather went by C.B.
This is your uncle?
Yes.
Okay.
And I have his memoir also of growing up in Flagstaff.
Oh, nice. What do you, is there anything you remember from your uncle's memoirs that comes to mind?
I do remember, he has a lot of, when he went to law school, he paid his way, how he saved his money to pave his way to go to law school, was he would unload freight cars of coal at like $2 a ton.
Whoa.
How he ever got enough money to go to law school, I don't know. But I know he did that as a young man, high school maybe.
Wow. And that was here in Flagstaff, or where was that?
Uh-huh, right here.
Okay.
At the train station. Yep, the train would come in with coal, and somebody had to unload it into bins that went to every house in town.
Right, because people were burning coal then to stay warm.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So, and he has stories about the old Indian powwow, when he would go to the powwows, or go even maybe up on the reservation, but dancing in them, he'd get out there and dance with them.
Nice.
Powwow.
And the Flagstaff powwow was famous for bringing in indigenous peoples from all across the Four Corners area.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, everywhere. We had Aztecs.
Okay.
That came up from Mexico. So, yeah, I always loved the Aztecs. They had all those feathers.
Okay.
They were so pretty. So.
Nice. So you were born in 46. Did you have any older or younger children, brothers and sisters?
I have a brother who was born in 1950.
Okay.
And both my parents, of course, had just served in World War II. And so my dad moved my mom here to Flagstaff after they got married in California after the war. And they packed up, they went and purchased all of their furniture and stuff, like beds and dressers and all that kind of stuff from the PX and hauled it all out to Flagstaff.
Huh?
And my mom had never seen country like this because she was from Arkansas. And then, of course, as soon as she left Arkansas, she went into the war and was on Guadalcanal. And they came on Old Route 66, of course, which went through Kingman and over all of the hills, Oatman, all of those places. And my mother was halfway across that area. She was standing there in Oatman looking out across the desert they had yet to cross, and she thought, what did I get myself into?
Oh, my.
She just could not believe, because she'd never been to Arizona, and she thought she was seeing what it was going to be like. Yeah. Then they came to Flagstaff. And, of course, the first year they were here, there was a huge snowstorm. So she said she couldn't wait for spring because she was going to have a baby in the spring, and she was finally going to be out of the snow. And I was born May 13th, and it was in the middle. There were 8 inches of snow on the ground.
Oh, my.
She was disappointed.
Did your father or mother ever talk about their service in the Second World War?
I have all of their stuff. I have my dad's exploits during the war. I have the nurses' camp, pictures of the nurses' camp and stories and things, all this stuff from both of them's war stuff, yeah.
Do you have a couple of things that interesting stories that your parents may have told you or recorded about their time in the service during the war?
I have a couple of things that I remember seeing as I went through all the scrapbooks. My uncle, his wife stayed home, of course, while he was at the war, and she gathered all of the family pictures and all this kind of stuff, and while she had all this time on her hands and she was expecting my cousin, who's a year older than I am, she made scrapbooks.
Okay.
For both my dad and my uncle.
Oh, wow.
Of all of this stuff from, you know, from their childhood all the way through. And so newspaper clippings from the war, of course, would get in there. So there were newspaper articles about my dad shooting down so many Japanese. He was in a little one-person plane, a Dauntless something. My brother told me what the name of it was. I'm looking at the picture right here on the table. Dawson Dauntless, maybe. Anyway, those little tiny planes like the Red Baron and stuff.
Well, it wasn't a biplane in World War II, was it? It would have been a fighter aircraft, I would have to assume.
It's a little fighter plane, yeah, that has, I'm sitting here looking at him sitting in it. It's just room for himself, and mm-hmm. He has, of course, little flags painted on the side from planes they shot down, you know, kept track of them. Anyway, but I know there was one story that there was a big meeting of the Rotary, and some of the state senators and everything were visiting the Rotary meeting and giving a talk. And the back door opened, and my dad came home on leave, came home to see his dad, who was at the meeting, and he walked in. And they said all the men in the whole meeting jumped up and ran to the door to beat him on the back and congratulate him, and senators were left with no audience.
Oh, my. That's lovely.
It was an article in the Flagstaff paper.
Nice.
So I have that. So, yes.
And what about your mom? Did she talk about her time as a nurse?
My mom, she grew up in Arkansas in a place called Walnut Ridge, and they were cotton farmers. And I have pictures, even when I was a child, of going, my parents went to visit the farm, and my grandfather at that time was still walking behind a mule with a plow
wow.
in the field.
Okay.
So, in his overalls, I mean, very much like you always see the old pictures. But it was a cotton farm, and they only had two children, and they didn't have any workers. And so from the time my mom was 2 or 3 years old, she was in the fields picking cotton.
Okay.
And she said, you know, that was, she hated it, hated it. It was cold, and their fingers would get bloody because mm-hmm. cotton is sharp. And stuff.
Yeah.
And she couldn't wait to get out of that town and to get out of Arkansas as she grew up. And as soon as she graduated high school, she went straight to nurses training in Memphis. And from nurses training, she joined the service and went to Guadalcanal. And she was one of the first 50 nurses on Guadalcanal, and they built the entire hospital area. And so I have lots of pictures and stories from her that, you know, I do remember, you know, some horror stories. And some things she said, one of her jobs, the worst job she had, she said, during the war, was she had to sit by these young boys, 17, 18-year-old boys who were dying,
mm.
and they dictated letters home to their mothers, and she had to write the letter.
Oh, my.
And send it for them because they couldn't write. They were too badly injured. So she would write the letter and have to send it back to their mothers. And she said that was the hardest job because, of course, the boys were just in tears.
Yeah.
Telling their mothers how much they loved them and,
mm-hmm.
you know, sorry, I'm never coming home, that kind of stuff. And she
yeah.
said that was the worst of all. She said the bedpans, the blood was nothing compared to having to do that job.
I bet.
So.
Yeah.
But she, when my parents came to Flagstaff, we had a couple of years here in town, and they lived in Clark Homes, which was war housing.
On the west side of Flagstaff.
Yes. And then they rented a little house up on Mars Hill, right downhill from my dad, my grandfather and Charles's house. They both have a house on that Wilson Road.
Okay.
And so they had a little place right there. And it had a wood-burning stove, which was the only way that she could cook. She had to learn to cook on top of this wood-burning stove. And she'd never had to do that before.
Wow.
But it was kind of a primitive thing. So.
Well, it was what everybody was doing at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Remind me a minute, go back for a minute to Jimmy, your father. When did he join the service? Did he graduate from high school and then join the service?
Yes, he graduated in 1938. And he got a football scholarship to go to the University of the Pacific in California. But he had an ankle injury that kept him from playing. And then the war broke out, and he just went right in and signed up. He had learned how to fly airplanes in Flagstaff.
Tell me that story.
Well, out at Coke Field, Francis Decker, who was another local person, he was flying airplanes out there, and my dad and my uncle were friends with his, and they would go out there, and they learned to fly.
Hang on a second. That's a Cope Field, C-O-P-E?
K-O-C-H.
Okay.
Pronounce it Cope.
And where was that?
Somebody's last name. That was out in the Doney Park area of Flagstaff.
Okay.
On North 89A.
Okay. So on the on the far east side of the San Francisco Peaks.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they learned to fly out there. Just, I don't know exactly what kind of planes they were flying.
What got your dad interested in flying back? Because this would have been, and I'm trying to work out the math, 1935-ish, 36?
Right. Yeah. His mother had a brother who was a flyer.
Okay.
And so I think that's the only reason that she would actually give him permission to let him be flying in those planes in those days. But she was actually the first woman, according to a newspaper article I have, she was the first woman to fly over the Grand Canyon in an airplane.
Oh, wow.
So apparently, you know, it was something that they were into.
Remind me of her name again.
Catherine Mars. And her brother's name was also James Mars. And he ended up, well, they ended up with no survivors. It was he and his wife and one son, and all of them are deceased, and the son didn't have any children. So, but I have all of his memories and pictures and everything that he did. And he rubbed elbows with Lindbergh and all these other people.
Wow. So let's go back to Catherine for a minute. Can you tell me more about her flight over the Grand Canyon? Do you remember, like, when that was and how she got in on that plane?
I do have the newspaper clipping somewhere.
Okay.
Look it up and find it, because I've been trying really hard to keep all these people's histories in compartment, you know, in files.
Yeah.
And all this other stuff, because I have so much.
Good for you.
So, but, yeah, but that it was in the Arizona Daily Sun, which I think was probably the Coconino Sun at that time.
I'll try to look that up online, see if I can find it.
Yeah. She also, she was very adventurous for a woman. She rode with a couple of other people up on the San Francisco Peaks with the sheep herders and camped and ate out of the Dutch ovens and all that kind of stuff. And she went out into the, what she called the, I guess they were, she called them ice caves, which are out by the Cinder Hills and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And did a lot of this kind of stuff, went to Walnut Canyon, all these places. And she wrote, she was quite educated, and she wrote articles about it. She wrote it back home to her family, and they published it in the newspaper.
Nice.
So I have some of her handwritten ones, and I also have the ones that were published in the paper.
Did she go under Catherine Mars, or did she have a pen name?
Uh-huh. No, she was at Catherine Mars.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, so, and I have those things, too.
Okay, so now we're going back to your dad, back to Jimmy, and Jimmy's learning how to fly with Francis Decker.
Right.
You know what kind of plane that he was learning how to fly?
I just don't. I'm sure, you know.
And did he get his license then?
Uh-huh. And then he joined the Navy when World War II broke out. When he joined the Navy, and the Marines were looking for pilots. So my dad had a Navy uniform, and he had a Navy office. I don't know whatever it was. First time I have pictures of him in his Navy uniform. But then the Marine Corps needed pilots because they were starting a flying branch of the Marine Corps. And so they took some of the pilots from the Navy, and he's one they chose.
Wow.
So he was in the Navy, and he was also then in the Marines.
Okay.
We have pictures of him in both uniforms.
Nice.
Yeah,
Did he ever talk about his flying in and around Flagstaff before he went to the University of the Pacific?
He did talk about just how Flagstaff's weather is so unpredictable that sometimes, you know, with the winds or with, you know, the bad weather, things would... He was always concerned with when they were getting ready to build an airport. He said they've got to be really careful about the angle of the wind and this and that, because he had been up and down in all of that. So.
Yeah. What was he studying in California?
Law.
Oh, okay.
Like his dad.
Okay.
So, yeah, he started out. And my Uncle Charles, his brother, was also a lawyer.
Okay.
So
in a way, he was following his flying uncle and his father and other family members in law.
Right.
Okay.
So when he got back, but the war broke out before he could get very far into law school.
Okay.
So when my mother and he came back, they moved to Tucson for a while, and we lived in a Quonset hut while he finished law school.
Okay.
She was a nurse in the hospital, and he was in law school. And so he went to class during the day while she stayed home with me, and then they met at a certain corner and transferred me back and forth, and so he went home and kept me at night while she worked the night shift at the hospital.
Did she work at St. Mary's? I'm trying to figure out which hospital she might have worked at. Could have been a Tucson Medical Center. I do not know the history of Tucson hospitals that well, but St. Mary's was there forever.
The Quonset huts were right adjacent to the campus.
Okay.
The U of A campus, which is where my dad was going to law school, because they walked, both of them walked from the Quonset hut to their work.
Okay.
So it had to be close to the university. Maybe it was the original university hospital.
Interesting. Okay. So as you grew up, did your mom keep working as a nurse?
She worked as a nurse in the Flagstaff Hospital. And when we first jumping ahead, but then after my dad became a lawyer and came and finished down at Tucson, we came back to Flagstaff, and my grandfather has had the business as C.B. Wilson and Wilson Compton and Wilson was, or at some time it was just Wilson and Son, but it was him and my Uncle Charles. But he told my dad, you know, all of those farmers that bring their fruit and all that kind of stuff up to Flagstaff, you know, there's ranchers and there's farmers down there in Sedona, and they have to come up Schnevely Hill in horse-drawn wagons and come to my office every time they need a deed drawn or a will made. And he said, why don't you just move to Sedona and have a Sedona office where they can come to you and do it, and it'll still be affiliated with us and where they know everybody, but they don't have to make the trip to Flagstaff. So that's what we did. In 1954, we moved to Sedona.
And how do you spell Schnebly?
S-C-H-N-E-B-L-Y.
Thank you. And Schnebly Hill was a steep, steep road that climbed out of Sedona up to the flat country, the flat highlands, and then headed off to Flagstaff. It must have taken them a day with a wagon just to make that trip.
Sometimes it took two or three, yeah.
My.
And of course, they would sometimes come with their whole family because the wives didn't have much in the way of stores or anything in Sedona to buy material or flour or any of that kind of stuff. So they would come up and, you know, use it for a day. But by the 50s, when we moved down there, we had more in the way of stores.
Okay.
But they still didn't have a lawyer. They didn't have any way to get legal work done. And, of course, since they were ranchers and farmers, they all had to have deeds of their property.
Okay.
So that was really pretty much the main thing my dad did. But he also did. He didn't do criminal cases. He just did all of those basic needs. And he did it in return for a side of beef or a barrel of pickles or we had all kinds of crazy things like that around because he didn't like taking their money for doing these necessary things. So we did a lot of bargaining down there, but that's when we moved down there. I mean, my mother worked for a doctor, a country doctor that worked down there, and Dr. Leo Schnur, S-C-H-N-U-R.
Sure.
He was quite famous in Sedona.
And Dr. Schnur was the physician at the Grand Canyon Hospital as well.
Oh, yeah. So he had an office in Sedona, and my mom was his nurse.
Okay. Oh, super. Do you know Paul Schnur, Dr. Leo Schnur's son?
Yes, I remember him from being... it's not somebody I have associated with, really. I don't think we were the same age group, but...
Okay.
Yeah, I knew him.
So. Okay. When did you guys move to Sedona, then?
In 54.
Okay.
And, my dad was Sedona's first lawyer, so he opened his office right on the main drag downtown.
Did he keep flying? Did you guys have a plane, or did he give up on that?
No, he gave up all that when he got married and had kids.
Okay. Okay. What are your earliest recollections of Flagstaff? You moved out of town when you were 8, but do you have any early recollections of your being a small girl in Flagstaff?
Oh yes, and I, you know, like I said, I have some pictures and stuff. We built a house on backing up to Navajo Road, which was in what they called Mortgage Flats. And my dad, I have a picture from the newspaper of him cutting the ribbon for house building in that area, and pictures from my front yard where there's not a house past our yard.
Where was your house? Where did he build your house?
It was on Hopi.
Okay.
Which backs up to Navajo.
Right.
And our house on Hopi, it was a 113 back in those days, but the numbers are different.
So would it have been the first house to go in that whole area?
On Hopi it was the first house.
Okay. So. And that would have been 1948-ish?
Just about. I think I was about 5. I was going to kindergarten at Emerson School. I walked to Emerson School.
51 then.
Yeah.
I am speaking to you from Navajo Road in one of those houses.
Oh, yes.
It's a small world here.
Yes. Well, do you know which house has the Killips?
They're on North Navajo, aren't they?
They're right. No. It's right by Marshall School.
Yes. So do you remember
back with them?
Do you remember Mrs. Wolf, Mr. and Mrs. Wolf?
Oh yeah, I live right next door.
Okay, I do not. But they had a son named Tom. And Tom is in Phoenix, and he comes up. His kids come up every now and then. They still have that house, and that was on the corner there.
Right.
Is it Navajo and Bonito? There, yeah, right next to Marshall School.
Right.
Okay.
And I walked from that house down to Emerson School, which is where the library is downtown.
Okay.
And I walked with Norm Killip and some of the other kids who grew up in that neighborhood.
Okay.
And so, and then we were right behind Norm's house because that was like the first kid I learned that I met. And he's still our best friend.
Nice.
So, so we lived there. And from our yard, there weren't any houses north. There was a dairy farm way out there and a few things like that, but there were no houses.
And the soil here is lovely. And I have, you know, and Jim Sanders lives next door. His wife Iola, or Pete, she goes by. They bought in early on when after the ribbon cutting. He served in World War II, and mentioned the dairy farm and how nice the soil was from that.
Yes, and of course all that area has water, and everybody has wells.
That's right. There's a little perched aquifer. You go down 15 feet, and there's water there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. My husband grew up on Navajo and have a supai right at the corner.
Okay.
And they had a well also, so everybody in that area. And the Day McGills, I lived next door to the Day McGills for a little while when I was married, and we all had wells and stuff. And the yards were great. We had such beautiful flowers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, okay. What else do you remember as a little girl from that time?
I remember, you know, little things like we would put out wading pools and play in the yard and, you know, that kind of stuff, but just mostly what we did in the neighborhood, I think.
Okay.
So then, of course, I never really left Flagstaff, because even though we were in Sedona, we came up. My dad was also in Rotary, and he was also, you know, in these organizations. So we were in Flagstaff at least 3 days a week, every week.
Okay.
And then when I was in high school, of course, I rode the school bus from Sedona to Flagstaff and back every day.
Wait a minute, up the switchback hill?
Yep.
Yeah. Every day?
Yeah.
That must have been exciting.
The Sedona school was first grade through eighth grade.
Okay.
And we had 40 kids in the whole school. So it was just a little group, and I have a lot of memories with that, and I still hang around with my grade school girlfriends in Sedona.
Nice.
But, yeah, so we had the Sedona school down there, and then after eighth grade, then everybody rode the bus. But the county line goes right straight through by the airport turnoff.
In Sedona.
And so after we got out of eighth grade, the kids that lived on the other side of the line had to go to Mingus and Cottonwood to high school, and everybody on the east side of the line went to Flagstaff High School.
Wow. So were you happy you had to go to Flag, or would you have rather gone off to Mingus?
Oh, no, I would have gone to Flagstaff. Mingus was... Cottonwood is not a real desirable place in those days.
Okay, I'll be careful here. Mind my P's and Q's.
I know.
Well, you were from Flagstaff, and you would have had friends there.
Oh, yeah.
So that makes way more sense.
Yeah, we already had friends and stuff, and I could stay at my grandfather's house overnight if there was a school dance or something I wanted to go to.
Okay.
The downside was, of course, that we couldn't stay after school like to play football or to be a cheerleader or
oh.
to go to a club.
Okay.
Because we had to ride the bus. There was only one bus, and we had to be on it. So
okay.
That was kind of the downside. But I was, you know, kind of lucky because I could stay at my cousin's house or my grandfather's house when there was an activity at night that I wanted to go to, like, you know, homecoming dance or whatever.
Nice. Okay. And then it sounds like your dad, as you mentioned, 3 days a week would come to Flagstaff. I'm assuming he would do some business as well with his
yeah.
father for the lawyer, for the legal company.
Right.
And so he basically, I'm assuming here, help me out, he would do legal work for people in Flagstaff and Sedona.
Mostly Sedona.
Mostly Sedona.
But he would come up and go and coordinate it all with my grandfather.
Okay.
You know, because my grandfather had all those original customers, clients.
Right.
And he already had paperwork on them, a
okay.
file, like for each ranch or whatever.
Nice.
So they'd go down and say, okay, well, he sold this property, so we have to update this, you know, this piece of land and that kind
mm-hmm.
of stuff
mm-hmm.
that they would do. But my dad was in the Naval Reserves, and so he came up for that meeting every week, and he also came to go to Rotary, and they did, you know, several things like that.
How many years was your father in the reserves?
Oh, he was in the reserves for most of his life.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he died in 66.
Oh.
He didn't have a long life. So, but yeah, he most of his life has spent in the Naval Reserves. I remember when my Uncle Charles retired from the Naval Reserves, he and John Stilley had gone into the service together and had been friends. And they had a big party together when they retired.
Oh, my.
My dad still had more years to go.
Huh. How did your father die in 1966?
He had a heart. Had a heart attack.
Oh, my.
He had his first heart attack when he was 32.
Okay. Oh, my.
And we
drove
to the Cottonwood Hospital. This is another reason we didn't know Cottonwood. But we drove to the Cottonwood Hospital. My mother was driving. My brother and I were in the back seat. And my dad was saying, I had mumps as a child. It can't be mumps, but it's just right here in my jaw, all this pain. Because it was the carotid artery thing.
Hmm.
Anyway, they got to the Cottonwood Hospital, and they decided that he had a brain tumor.
Oh, my.
And they shaved his head to go in and operate And then they hooked up the EKG and realized he was having a heart attack.
Wow.
And so just the fact that he then lived to get to a Phoenix hospital while he was in the middle of a heart attack was a pretty amazing thing. But he was 6 weeks in Phoenix in the hospital.
My.
My brother and I got farmed out to other families in town so we wouldn't miss school. But yeah, he had heart attacks every year.
Was he a smoker?
All those.
They all, yeah.
World War II guys came
yep.
home smoking.
Yeah.
And my mom, too.
Okay.
Both of them were smokers. And if he could have had a bypass, in those days, then he would have lived, but he couldn't do that, so.
Right. That's one thing, looking at the technology of cardiac control today versus, this would have been in, 1950s, 1960s, so much different.
Yeah. So we did not go to Cottonwood for any doctor services ever again. Flagstaff.
Well, that's a real interesting question.
But of course, we knew everybody in Flagstaff. It's just the Cottonwood was so much closer for my mom to drive in an emergency.
Right. Of where people went for health care, people at Grand Canyon would go down to the Verde Valley for health care because the tiny little clinic or little hospital at the South Rim didn't have much. And I'm not sure that Flagstaff did either for a while.
Yeah, well, we had a few doctors and stuff up here that apparently is who we used. Dr. Curran, I know, was my dad's heart doctor. But my mother, when we first moved back to Flagstaff, my mom became a nurse for Dr. Kittredge, and then they were, of course, friends with Dr. Stilley and Dr. Sitterly and Dr. I'll think of it in a minute. A lot of the doctors were personal friends of our family.
Nice. And Jenny, I'm going to go back to how do you spell Kittredge, and how do you spell Staley?
Okay, Kittredge is Kittridge.
Thank you.
Kittredge Road is named after that family, and that's close to you,
mm-hmm.
further north. Yeah, that was Dr. Kittredge, and he was a general practitioner here in town. My mom worked for him, and of course, they were friends of ours, and his brother... Dr. Kittredge's brother is the one, if you go down to Oak Creek, there's one Forest Houses is a kind of resort thing across the creek, and there's a statue of a colt on a post just as you go past it, right by Don Hole's cabins.
Okay.
On the other side. And he was an artist. He was a very famous artist, and he did a lot of sculpture and that kind of stuff.
This is Dr. Kittredge's brother.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were both very local, and everybody knew them.
Okay.
So, anyway.
And then Staley? How do you spell that?
Stilley.
Thank you.
There were two of them, Sitterly and Stilley. But Dr. Stilley is the one who built the organs in the Episcopal Church and in Grady and in the NAU auditorium over there.
Really? You mean funded the building, or did
he
actually build them? Really?
He built them.
Okay, and that's Stilley?
E-Y, uh-huh.
Okay. But he was a physician.
Yes.
So he built organs, in his spare time?
He was actually a dentist.
Okay.
And yes, and he studied in Europe. He went to all of those great cathedrals and studied all their organs and everything and came back and built them. The one in the Episcopal Church and the one in the... auditorium. Named after somebody.
The Audrey Auditorium?
Yes, Audrey Auditorium.
Okay.
Yes. And an Audrey Auditorium. And there's a plaque right by it that says that it was built by Dr. Stilley.
Wow.
And his mom and my mom were real close friends, too.
Nice. A lot of just really intelligent, creative people.
Yes. Yeah, it was funny because, it was a small town. Not a lot of people knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of a white spot on the Route 66 to most people, but we had a lot of very intelligent, smart, hardworking people here. It was just great. Actually, it was great growing up here.
Nice. And I was thinking about the tourist flow at the time to get to the south rim of Grand Canyon would have mostly been coming off of Route 66 out of Williams.
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
And Cameron, out by Cameron.
Oh, that's right. They were coming from the East Rim Drive.
Right.
So they would bypass Flagstaff altogether.
Right.
Anyone who was coming south from...
would bypass it completely. And of course, the road to Phoenix didn't exist.
Right, the highway...
When we went to Phoenix, we had to go through Prescott and over Darnell Hill and through Wickenburg.
Right, Congress and the Beeline Highway, not the Beeline, but the Congress Junction, and then down the highway that went to Kingman and Hoover Dam.
Right.
Down that way to Phoenix.
Yeah.
Okay.
My grandfather was cousins to Wyatt Earp.
Oh, my.
And he would go to California and visit Wyatt sometimes.
Wow.
And back in his day.
Okay.
And he said... he had to carry a broom because it was a wooden road. And, of course, the dust would blow out on that desert. And he would have to get out and he would have to sweep for like a mile and then get back in his old, whatever the old car was, Model T, and drive it to where he stopped sweeping and then get out and sweep another mile.
This was the wooden road out to San Diego, out through the sand dunes.
Right, right.
Wow.
A mess, and he gave me a list of the stuff that he had to carry in his car. You know, he had to have water, and he had to have tools, and he had to have, you know, rugs to put under the tires in case he got stuck, and he had all this stuff. It was a major thing, and it took days. He had to sleep in the car.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we take all this for granted. Just, you know, San Diego's only, you know, 7 hours away. You just drive down there.
And
then have to sweep the sand off the wooden plank road.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Hysterical.
That's amazing. Jenny, we've been yik-yakking almost an hour here.
Okay.
I've had a lovely time. I hope you have too. This is really neat. I hope you're willing that we can do this again. Because I certainly learned a lot, and I have a ton of questions for you about what you remember about your first years in Sedona. But with that, I think maybe we should hold up here. Is there anything else, though, that you're like, wait, I want to make sure I mention such and such with the ground we've just covered?
No, I think that's fine.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, this will conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jenny Turner. Today is Monday. It's February 14th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin. And Jenny, thank you so very much.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you again soon.